What's up, everybody? It is your boy D Weezy, and welcome to season three of Bears of the Heart. We are so glad to be back. Are we? I don't know. Okay.
I'm so glad that I'm here. I thought you had a lot more to say.
I'm glad to be back, man. It's been, I know y'all have missed us. You know, we love you and appreciate you. We're so sorry we took a break. But it could not be helped. We'll get into that in a minute. But again, I'm your boy D Weezy, and we've got So Debonair here.
So Debonair, Debonair with the O. You know, I'm Aaron also on this podcast. But I am so excited to be back. I know we've been getting so many emails and inboxes and people trying to figure out where we're at. So we're finally back. And
finally. Sorry. We'll talk about it. So sorry.
So what's been going on since season two's ended?
Man. Okay, so the reason that we took a break, if you do not know, I lost my grandmother to COVID. So it was unexpected, but it was expected. She had been in the hospital since Easter, and we did not anticipate her leaving us, but she kind of declined in health. And so she passed on June 1st. So,
yeah, I did send out a message to the listeners, let them know what's going on, so that they did have that information. So, we're glad that you're doing good, though.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a rough week last week, but I'm glad to be getting back to some normalcy and getting back to our heartbeats.
Yeah, same here. I mean, for me, I've just been really busy with my business. I registered it with the state.
Congratulations.
And so my business has been picking up a lot more, so I kind of needed the break as
well. Oh, you needed the break? Okay, okay.
As much as I didn't want to take it, I am glad that we did take it because I just had so much going on and I wanted to make sure that financially I was okay. So, you know, that's been going on. And then, you know, with everything with coronavirus to the Black Lives Matter thing, and I just was like, you know what, because you had asked me to do it by myself, and I was like, I really don't want to do it without you because so much is going on.
Yeah.
And I mentally need to gain consciousness of everything that's going on and try to really figure out how I feel about it.
Okay.
And I think that's really my main thing, was that I didn't know how to feel. There was so many different emotions, and this, especially when it started hitting Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think that's a great segue into kind of just talking about what, you know, what we're facing, what we're feeling. I'm quite sure that there are some heartbeats out there that feel the same way about you, you know, that you feel. So, you know, let's kind of dive into it. You know, it is really... It's really the civil rights movement of our generation, or our
absolutely.
You know, we've seen the footage of Dr. King, we've seen the footage of Malcolm X, we've seen the footage of Congressman John Lewis. You know, the marches and the things that they've done and they fought for, the sit-ins, the way that they were brutally attacked with dogs and fire hoses. You know, this is the movement that we are currently in at the present moment, and so you kind of have to take it in. You kind of have to figure out where you fit in.
You know, I'm glad to see that, one, the approach is kind of strategic when it comes to us now. Mm-hmm. Because we realize that they want nonviolence. But we also knew that it was going to take some things for us to get to the nonviolent portion of this.
Well, I think you also have to take into consideration that any movement has anarchists.
Absolutely.
Which are people that are violent, period.
Right.
And find it an opportune time to be violent, right, or to set things on fire or to raid and pilfer things. And so there's two separate groups of people happening. There are people that are protesting for the justices and the injustice, and there are people that are anarchists and that are, you know, blending in with the protesters to say, you know, we're here for the protest, but then we're also going to burn down this building, or we're also going to loot or, you know, raid this area.
But you also kind of see it in shifts.
Yeah.
Where it's like during the daytime, we're peacefully protesting. At nighttime, all hell breaks loose, you know? Yeah. And it was like that for the first couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And you see a little bit of fires and a little bit of things like this. The looting pretty much stopped at this point.
Right.
But you do see some damages going on. But that's the part that I think I really loved about it was you saw it in shifts. It was like first shift happened, you know, the second shift happened, then third shift happened.
Right.
And third shift, they always tired.
Right.
So they don't really care. But, you know, so they came in and they pulled their shift through and people didn't like it. But guess what? The results of all three shifts made a difference. And it's making a difference. And I think that was very important to understand for people that don't understand what this looks like when we're fighting for our lives at this point.
Yeah.
Because even though Dr. Martin Luther King was nonviolent, there were other shifts that time, you know.
Yeah.
And I think people just only remember that shift. They don't remember the other shifts that came along with that. And so, you know, even with my social media, you know, I've been on fire because people are like, well, why do you feel like this and why do you feel like this? I'm like, because I feel like there is a time and there's a place for everything. And I think that, you know, our younger generation are basically the radicals of this situation. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, so they're going to do what they do, but that doesn't mean that their part wasn't important. It may have been important to us who are like, I ain't going to jail. But,
right.
You know, some of us have some records. We don't want to go back to jail. We might be right there a little bit longer than these people. But, you know, so but they did what they had to do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that it was a great thing to see that there could be levels to this.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that the white folks and the cops got it, you know. What level do you want this to go to? And so that's just what's really been going on. And again, like I said, I just really appreciate the fact that there were a lot more people who were able to see that there were different shifts of what was going on.
I think too, you know, in our pre-discussion, we mentioned this in terms of, you know, everybody has a place.
Yes.
So, you know, you may not be the protester, or you may not be a part of the angry mob,
right,
but maybe you're donating your time, or maybe you're donating your money to causes, or maybe you are, you know, passing out water to the protesters. Maybe you're passing out food to the protesters. Maybe you're making signs and passing them out. I love marches and let me say it this way. I love marches and organized protests.
Yes.
I have, you know, from my family history, my great-grandmother used to tell me stories when I was younger about the March on Washington and marching in D.C. with Martin Luther King and being there and being present for it. And so that has always stuck out in my mind growing up. And so now that I have an opportunity to be a part of history and I have an opportunity to, you know, be a voice or be present, I take those opportunities as quickly and as soon as I possibly can. So my homeboy JP is a graphic designer, and he graphic designs all these different signs, and he's doing it out of his own pocket. He's not asking for any money, so he'll make the signs, print them in bulk, put them on posts, and then like we'll go to marches and pass them out for free so that people have something
to hold.
And so I don't know if you've seen any of the newscasts yesterday from the...
Well, I've seen your Instagrams and your...
Well, right. Posts. Well, yeah.
So I've seen... Y'all had amazing signs.
He created them all. And from my post. But then, like, yesterday we did the NAACP march to the Capitol. And first of all, as soon as we got there, the signs were gone. Everybody had a sign. Mm-hmm. But then, like, every picture from yesterday's march displays one of his signs, like whether it was New York Times or Wall Street Journal or any news publication has his signs in them. And so I think it's, you know, everybody has their place. If you're sitting at home and absolutely doing nothing, then that is also a part of the problem, I think.
Yeah, it is.
You know, if you're posting, if you feel better by posting and reposting things that you think are valid and relevant, then absolutely, if you feel like you need to be on the front lines, that's great. If you feel like you need to be more of a support by getting water or food to those that are, you know, that are processing and that are on the front line, then that's also great. Like, there is a place for everybody.
Yeah, I want to shout out a group I'm in. It's called American Citizens for Effective Social Change. And I actually posted something that just sparked when you started talking about this, but I actually posted something I had seen on social media. It was talking about the different things that you can do if you can't be out on the front lines.
Yeah. Is it long?
No, it's not long at all.
Read it.
It's actually just like four titles, actually. But one is sign makers. And, you know, people, if you're graphic designers, if you don't want to be out in the streets, but it's a way to actually just participate in whatever is going on. The other one was eyes and ears. Whether you're out there in the streets or if you're on social media, you see things, post it and start. You have eyes, you have ears, you can start reporting it to your representatives and things like that. So you're the eyes and ears, so you're still a voice. The other one is caretakers. You know, when the police start shooting those rubber bullets and things like that to take care of folks who have been a part of that. And then the last one was just donators, people who just donate to the cause. So there are different ways for people to actually participate without having to be out in the streets protesting because you're afraid or you just can't do it. I mean, some people have legal issues. They can't be out there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not because they don't want to. They just physically, they can't be out there because if they get arrested, other charges are going to come up. They're going to be there longer than overnight.
So. I think that those are so many valid points. Two things you said that I think I want to comment on. Number one, sign makers, as I mentioned with, you know, my homeboy JP, they were so impactful. He made these cartoons to a degree, I mean, professional looking cartoons of the people that had passed. And Rashad Brooks's family reached out to him and asked if they could use his design for the funeral.
Wow.
You know, I mean, so it's changed like that, you know, he did it out of the kindness of his heart. But, you know, it reaches people even when you don't know. Yeah. So create the signs. Create what you feel in your heart. I mean, this was a passion project for him. So for those that are creatives, create something that is going to speak, you know, volumes. And just because there's so many people that are creating things does not necessarily mean that we don't need your creation, too.
That's true.
You know, we, you know,
because it's everywhere. This is so, there's so many places.
Yeah.
That you definitely, it's almost like having a podcast. Like,
yeah.
Every voice is heard.
And you know it's what I valid. Mean?
And it's very valid. So
unless you're talking about shit.
Yeah, well, I mean, shit is heard too. But I mean, it's still worth at least the attempt. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you have so many ways to just be a part of it. And I think the eyes and ears were the one that I thought the most. Because when it came to the people that were out there, when the black people were out there and they were busting out the windows and writing and doing the graffiti and they're like, stop doing that. It's not us. So it was like white people and what
it was vigilantes.
Yeah. It was like, it wasn't us doing that. And so because they were eyes and ears, they were able to also spread the message that we are peacefully protesting.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that even, you know, to that point, the Rashad Brooks situation here in Atlanta, who, you know, he was, if you have not heard, I believe, what, 3-4 nights ago, Rashad Brooks was in, he was sitting in his car at a Wendy's in South Atlanta, and he fell asleep.
Well, he was here in Atlanta. He wasn't in South Atlanta. He was in South Atlanta.
Okay. yes. And he fell asleep in the drive-thru, and the cops, you know, asked him to pull over, you know, or, you know, pull into a parking space because he had fallen asleep. And he, you know, he seemed kind of discombobulated. He seemed kind of disoriented. So they asked him to do a sobriety test. And he did the sobriety test, still a little bit disoriented. And they attempted to arrest him. And he struggled in the arrest. And this is all happening. You know, people are recording it. It's all happening in the Wendy's parking lot. So you've got surveillance cameras from the Wendy's and you've got surveillance cameras from people that are still in line in the drive-thru at Wendy's. As he struggles to get away, he ends up grabbing one of the cops' taser guns and runs and goes to shoot the taser gun at one of the cops. And then
let's rewind it real quick because I've watched this, the full hour and some video.
Mm-hmm.
So he was extremely drunk. He was. Yeah. The problem was is that they killed him, and he shouldn't have to be killed because
absolutely.
I posted many videos on my page, on my Facebook page, where there have been white people who have murdered people, who have assaulted people who were in churches. This man who killed two people and some children, and he was chasing the cops. Mm-hmm. And they arrested him. He was not dead. But with this story, the thing was this. So the reason why he grabbed the taser was because they kept saying, we're about to tase you. So he took the taser from them. Mm-hmm. He did not tase the cop until the other cop tased, until the cop tased him. He was trying to get away. So the stroke that people are having is that he should not have lost his life.
I agree.
Which he should have not lost his life. And I think that people keep trying to justify and play devil's advocate
because
they want to be on the right side of being right. But the right side of right is the fact that this man lost his life over a DUI.
Yeah.
When honestly, if the cops were there to protect us, they could have easily called someone and took it and let him go home. Mm-hmm. But because they're so, and the reason why I'm very passionate about this is because I've had DUIs. Mm-hmm. And times where I played good to a DUI, I never even, wasn't even drunk. But because I was tired, I had to plead guilty to one. So I'm very passionate about it because I feel like the rules that are here in Georgia set you up so much mm-hmm. With a DUI that it's just like, you don't have a choice. You don't have a dog in the fight mm-hmm. because the rules here are if your keys are in the ignition and you're in the driver's seat, you're considered operating a vehicle under the influence. Mm-hmm. Even if you're sitting in the passenger side of the car and your keys are in the ignition, you're still considered operating a vehicle under the influence. Mm-hmm. These are things that people don't understand. So either way it goes, and they would have considered him operating this vehicle under the influence. Mm-hmm. Not the fact that this man put his car in park and went to sleep in the driveway because he felt like he couldn't drive the car. And I think that's the biggest issue that a lot of people are starting to see, because you have Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Mm-hmm. You have people who feel like you shouldn't be drinking and driving, which all of that is correct. But when you are a person who drinks, I mean, it's almost inevitable for you not to do it. You know what I mean? Because if you're going to bars and you're drinking, you're going to be drinking and driving. Now, if you're putting people's lives at risk, that is a different conversation. But because you can't get to the drive-thru to order your meal, I don't think that's a reason for me to have to call for to get a DUI and then lose my life. And I think that's the struggle that people are having, because now they're like, well, they've been fighting so hard for DUIs and Mothers Get Drunk Driving and not drinking and driving. But then you have people who are responsible enough to say, this is enough. I can't do this. Let me not drive my car. And so we get to this place where we're here. And because the law is set up for you not to, you're doomed either way that it goes. Unless you either sleep at wherever you was drinking at, or you find, if you're conscious enough to find someone to take you home, or whatever the other options are. But a lot of people that go out to drink are already driving, and they don't, I mean, Uber, it gets expensive after a certain time of day, especially at nighttime, the surge prices go up. So it's like, this is really a thing where I think that the laws need to be adjusted. They need to start looking at them and how they are, and not to set up people who drink and want to go home, but how do you help these people get home safely?
I see their perspective, mm-hmm. right? I see your perspective in terms of the law not being on your side and not helping you in the process of the situation, especially if you made the conscious effort or the decision to park your car because you knew you were drunk, and it's safe, you felt like it was safer for you to park it and be in it as opposed to driving it anywhere. I understand that perspective. I think as people that do drink, I think you just have to be a little bit more responsible in the aspect of...
I totally agree with that.
You know, if you know that you're going to be drinking, then have a backup plan. Like, have somebody say, hey, I'm not in a space to drive my car. I don't feel safe. You know, like have a plan of action so that, you know, you don't put people's lives in jeopardy, or you don't put your life in jeopardy for that matter.
But I think what the issue is that the law is set up where you, like, let's say that I went out and I got drunker than I was expecting to get. Because, I mean, you really don't know how drunk you're really going to get when you drink. You don't know what drink is going to hit, what's going to, and how it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Well, let's say that I went out, I started drinking, and I realized, wow, I can't drive my car home.
Okay.
I can't go to my car and sleep because I can't sit in my car, especially if it's hot outside or if it's freezing outside. I can't put the keys in the ignition because if a cop comes by and sees me sleeping in my car, I'm getting a DUI.
With the keys in the ignition. Is that the base point? If the keys are not in the ignition,
right.
Then if you're sleeping they're in your
gonna,
car, then...
Let me say, they're still going to bother you if you're sitting in the driver's seat regardless.
Okay.
But will you get a DUI? I have no idea. But I do know that they probably will take you to jail to let you sober up, which is, I don't understand. If I'm trying to sober up my car, why would you take me to jail? But that still happens. But my thing is if I'm responsible enough to know my limitation, why can I not go into my car that I purchased, I paid the bills on, I put the gas in, to sleep in my car and not have to die over overheating or freezing to death because I can't put the keys in the ignition so that I can turn the heat or the air on in my car? And I think that's the issue that people struggle with, because the reason that they made that law was because I guess people were pulling over before the cops, like, actually pulled them over, took the keys out the ignition, and so they weren't able to give them DUIs. So it was really like a thing where they were able to not give them DUIs because people were getting smarter than the cops. Mm-hmm. But no one wins with this, is what I'm saying. Because I feel like a lot of people who drink, like for me, I know my limitations. If I get in my car and I'm like, I can't even talk straight and walk straight when I get to the car, my thing would be to sleep in the car until I can get it together. Mm-hmm. But that, legally, you're not allowed to do that. So I don't know. I mean, I think that something needs to be done unless we just can't drink when we go out.
I just think, I think that there should be, while I hear that there should be some amendments to the way that the law is set up so that you can have the opportunity to sober up, I also think there's a level of responsibility that kind of has to take place, which I totally understand. And every situation is subjective. There, you know, every situation is not the same. The situation with Rashad Brooks was not, you know, ideal, and it was not the same as somebody who, you know, he was sober enough to go to Wendy's to get something to eat and just kind of nodded off at the wheel. But we, you know, moving forward, I think that, you know, there's so many things that everyone can do. Finding your place and finding your space in this movement is necessary. I think you also need to understand and realize that your money travels very far. You know, yeah. where you spend your money, how you spend your money, pay attention to these blackouts and how, you know, this is the only way that we'll get people's attention. Make sure you've registered to vote. You know, the one thing I will say that I've heard quite frequently is, well, voting doesn't help and voting doesn't matter. And I disagree with that strongly, only because that is the only voice and the only way that you have. So what I will suggest, while voting is not the sole answer,
right,
voting is a way that you can be active and be proactive in making sure that change does happen. So make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure you know exactly where you need to vote, because this, you know, we've just had some primary elections that just passed for certain states, and then the big election in November. Also, if you're not familiar with how the structure of government works, do some research. Know who you're voting for.
Well, can I say this? I think that a lot of people say that because they only vote for the president.
That's what I'm saying. But these primary, and I think I'm saying it correctly, but the primary elections is, yeah, you know, are the people in the Congress.
But I also want to say this is a lot of times you don't know who to vote for. I know what you, but I just want to get here real quick. A lot of, because even for me, like, my friend had to tell me, because I didn't even know nothing about who to vote for, what it is like to vote for in my city, and like who these people are, because honestly, we don't see. The only person I really knew of was Devin, because he was here. But we don't really know. Like, a lot of people don't know if we're not into politics like that.
But the thing is that was my point that I was trying to make.
Okay,
in terms of, it's okay. You have to know who you're, so you have to vote for people in your district that are going to represent the district in the state. Then you have people that are in the state that are going to represent in Congress. So you're going to vote for district, who is your representative for your district, and districts have different appointed representatives for the state. And they're the ones that work in the state at the Gold Dome is what they call it in the state capitol. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, making the laws and doing the things here within the state. And then you have representatives for the state of Georgia that represent the state in Congress. Mm-hmm. So you vote on all of those people. And those are the people that that are more important than the president, obviously, because they're the ones that know what's going on in the neighborhoods, know what's going on for the laws that need to take place within the district and within the state.
I just think for the average citizen, you know, the presidents, they go through all these debates and things like that. And, you know, that's what you really see. And I'm speaking from my own experience and someone who isn't really into politics like that. All these other people that you're voting for your own state legislation, I mean, I don't really see them a part of anything. I don't know who they are. Like, I feel like I was thrown into, like, real quick, like, let's figure out who the people are so I can vote, you know, this time, because now black people are getting killed. Coronavirus is going on. I don't know what's going on. Like, I just need to hurry up and do something. So I feel like I had to do that. But I feel like, you know, when it comes to presidents, it takes so long for them to become the president, and they have to go through all these things before they actually are voted for. And it doesn't seem like it's that when it comes to your state legislation. And maybe it is, but it's not as publicized as it is for the president.
Well, because you're looking at commercials and you're listening to the radio and you're looking at their campaigns in that aspect.
Right.
But for your district folks, like when Devin was here, mm-hmm. one of the things I remember us specifically asking, what is the best way for us to learn the grassroots of who our district is, who's in our district, what they're doing, so on and so forth. And he mentioned, you know, as comical as it was, but it makes sense, you know, the little Schoolhouse Rock song, a bill gets passed, you know, I'm just a bill, I'm only a bill, like those things, at least you'll get some kind of structure about how.
But that's our generation. This young generation don't have that.
That's why we're talking about it.
Well, no.
But I'm saying, you know, like I'm saying that, I mean, there's an option there, but then, you know, just do some research on who is your district representative. What is their job? What are they supposed to do? I mean, a lot of the things, and especially with the march that I just did yesterday with the NAACP, you know, they spoke very candidly about, you know, your district representatives and your state representatives not doing their jobs. You know, and hindsight, they work for us. And so if there is something going on in your district, like, for example, you have a lot of vegetation in your district. You have a lot of abandoned homes. You have a lot of, you know, so if you felt that there was a need for, you know, change in that aspect, then you would go to your district representative and say, hey, these potholes in front of my house has been there for, you know, blah, blah, you know, whatever the complaint is, or even whatever the compliment is.
But just, I'm saying, like, how do you know that is?
You can actually, for if you go to
Georgia, or if I don't even know anything about it, like how would I know that that's what I'm supposed to go to?
Because you know what district you live in, number one. So when you go, for example, there is a website that you can go to, and I don't have it off the top of my head, but for every state, mm-hmm. it has a .gov website. Mm-hmm. It's the same website you go to for to find out where your voting poll is, mm-hmm. and that information tells you what district number you're in, what state number you're in, as far as your representative. Like, your representative is also over a certain number of districts. So you've got a district representative and you got a state representative that is also over the hierarchy of that person.
But can I tell you how confusing that was to find out where I needed to go vote?
Well, I mean, but
because I clicked on a link. I kept on Googling, where am I supposed to go vote at? I clicked on the link. It all kept taking me to the same place. So I'm putting my information. It's like giving me this error message for like multiple times. And so it took me so long to even to get through to that. And I'm like, if I didn't know that this has to be the website, I would have just gave up. Because I clicked on that link so many times to put my information in, and it would not let me get through. I had to try to re-register again to register to vote for me to find out where to go vote.
Well, you also have to take into consideration that is the problem with Georgia.
Yeah.
Specifically. And that is the same thing that Stacey Abrams, you know, fought during her governor run.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some odd reason, there are numbers of voters who have registered, like in your case, which you may even be one of them, where you've registered, you know you've registered before.
I did it on Facebook, and when I tried to do it again, it was like, you're already registered.
Right, so you know that you've registered, and you've probably used this address.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that you've used this address, and you probably got the card in the mail stating that yep. you had registered, this is your address, mm-hmm. you got all the information, and then somehow in the systems, it has removed you as a registered voter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem that Stacey Abrams was fighting during her run as governor, because there's so many people that have been removed when they know that they have registered and they have all of the confirming information. And now when they go to vote or they go to get their information, they can't find it.
Yeah.
So it's, and not to mention that Tuesday, you know, I voted first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Like I got to the polls at 7 a.m. The line was wrapped around the building, and by 8 a.m.
Even with early registration, it was like that.
It was down. I mean, it was wrapped around everywhere by 8 a.m. But from my understanding, by mid morning or mid afternoon, polls weren't working. People stood outside and waited to vote until 9 and 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, I think people had waited like 7 hours.
Yeah. So, I mean, Georgia has a humongous problem, which was also a part of the march yesterday to the state capitol with the NAACP, because, you know, I forget the commissioner's name who's over voting, but he claims, you know, he wants to put the blame to other people when it was only his responsibility to make sure that the polls were up and running and making sure that everybody had the opportunity to vote. So, you know, What I find with this movement is that, yes, Black Lives Matter and voter suppression and white supremacy and all of those things are at the forefront, but then we're also finding all these little holes of other things and other problems
right.
that we have within our community and that we've been kind of footing the bill for. I will say, I know we probably went way over time in terms of this topic, but...
We did. I actually want to ask you another question, but I don't know if we have... trying to do it with this. And this may be a longer episode than we normally have. But I had a conversation on social media. And to me, I feel like I learned something that I did not want to learn, but I learned it about what Black Lives Matter really means. Because to me, I feel like Black Lives Matter is just for police brutality. I don't feel like it's a unity for Black people as a whole.
I'm laughing because I had this conversation with my heterosexual brother.
Okay.
My blood brother, he's older.
I met him.
Yeah, and we don't argue,
mm-hmm.
but we really had a very heated conversation because a couple days ago, I woke up very, very upset.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up upset because... I'm going out to these protests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm showing solidarity for Black Lives Matter. I'm holding the signs. I'm shouting. I'm holding my fist up. I am representing for Black Lives because I do believe that Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
But I feel a little uncomfortable because if Black Lives Matter, then my LGBTQ Black life also should matter.
That's all I'm
saying. Right?
Yeah.
And I witnessed people at these protests where, you know, the LGBTQ community is showing up and showing strong, you know, and proudly wearing...
There wouldn't be no Black Lives Matter movement without us.
And proudly wearing their, you know, LGBTQ paraphernalia
yeah.
in support of Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
And some of the side eyes that we're getting from, you know, the Black community,
mm-hmm.
because we're here and we're... So Black Lives Matter, but our Black life doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I had a very big problem internally about this conversation, my brother and I got into a debate because he, like you just said, it's like, well, but this is specifically about police brutality with the Black community, and I said, but aren't we a part of the Black community? Like, how are you excluding the fact? So when I brought that to his attention, then his rebuttal was, well, let's solve the police brutality yep. conversation first, and then let's get to the LGBTQ Black Lives Matter. I said, but it's all the same. So how can you let's kind of back up a little bit. Let's talk about the fact that the Black Lives Matter movement was initially started in part with the LGBTQ community.
Yes.
We're the ones that initiated the movement for Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
What happened was these three black women decided that I don't know the complete details, but what I understand is that they then either brought the rights or had brought the rights or the name or they purchased it and now it is their movement.
Yeah.
But it originally started in part by the LGBTQ community.
Yeah.
And moving, if we take history back a minute, the LGBTQ community has been a part of every major movement.
There has been
one person that has absolutely been a part of, that was a part of the LGBTQ community, that also was a very big voice during every movement that has happened within American history.
Yeah.
So we had Bayard Rustin for the Civil Rights Movement. He completely organized the March on Washington that Martin Luther King spoke at. You can't etch us out of black lives because we are black lives.
Right. I mean, I got into a whole... Me and my mom aren't even talking right now.
Oh, jeez.
Real talk. I mean, seriously, this is how sad it is for me. We're not even talking right now because I posted on my Facebook page. I said, when we are talking about black lives, are we including the black LGBTQIA+ community? And of course, they got, what is the IA+ and all this stuff? I'm like, see, we're already getting off course.
Right, right.
But, and people... They were so mad about it. So I had to personally inbox people because I'm like, I really don't want to get lost in this. I really want to make sure that you understand the fact that we are still black as fuck. And that's that. I'm like, and we are the front runners when it comes to the Black Lives Matter movement. So I don't want y'all to forget the fact that we are still here and we're queer. But
I'm sure they didn't hear you. Do it again.
That we're here and we're queer.
And we're queer.
But that we are a part of this because we are still black. And they're like, well, they see black first. I said, guess what? When I'm at the gay club, it ain't always gonna be being black first. So stop saying that because that's ignorant. And when our transgender people are out, they don't always see black first.
Yeah.
But guess what? It adds on to the fact that they are transgender and they black. So I got a lot of flack from that, and it really made me so sad because I'm like, I have to separate the fact that Black Lives Matter, the name is not what the movement is about, because the name is about unity. The movement is about police brutality, and even talk about police brutality, we're still not even addressed in that. So, and I brought up Orlando because what people don't realize is the fact that there were multiple reports about cops holding the door shut while that man was shooting up that club.
I remember that, yeah.
There were 31 cops who were under investigation after that happened in 2018.
Yeah.
But people don't want to see that. And I'm like, you know what? Let me take a step back. And I got a really nasty message from my mom after that. And I had to cut her off.
Wow.
I did. And I told my dad and I told my aunt, I said, listen, y'all know I love my mom to death, but this I can't put up with because I'm tired of the separation where you black before you gay. I'm like, I came out the same on day one.
Yeah.
You may not have known that, but I knew that for me.
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't, she was talking about my penis and I'm like, it has nothing to do with me having sex. It's my sexuality. And it's what I'm attracted to, and it's who I am as an individual person.
But you're still black.
And I'm still black.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you can't tell me which one I am first. You don't know what God's plan was. He could have made me gay before I could be clear and be gay. You don't know. Like, it doesn't really matter how you feel about it. The fact is that I'm both. And I think that that is so important in this atmosphere because people do not understand the fact. And then this is the other thing that really tip me off was Beyonce was up. There was rumors about her for Black Panther. They went through this whole thing. They petitioned about her. This and that, blah, blah, blah. I saw a lot of people saying, oh, they want to keep this black woman down. I'm like,
they want to keep her, meaning they don't
want her. They don't see her higher than than anything. They can't see the capacity of her this black woman. And I'm like, well,
that has nothing to do with the capacity of who she is. It's the fact that can she play the part?
Well, no, but that's not the point that I'm talking about, because she probably can't play the part. But
you can't?
She cannot.
Thank you. Yes. Okay. I thought we were having a moment.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I'm still part of the Beehive.
I love her.
But
no, yes. Just not for Storm.
But okay. The comments that black women were saying was that we still can't respect black women. And I'm like, well, during this time, we're supposed to be about our black women's movement. And I'm like, well, y'all don't respect different portions of the black lives. So it's like, to me, it's like people are only concerned about their portion of the black lives. Yeah. So again, to me, the Black Lives Matter movement is about police brutality. And I have to separate that from me, because in my mind, I have to be organized when it comes to things.
Yeah.
So I have to organize the fact that Black Lives Movement is about police brutality.
It is.
And I mean, in my mind, I feel like it's just for heterosexual men, because I don't think that it really matters for the rest of us.
Well, you know, what's interesting is someone posed this question and I can't unhear it. So someone posed this question to one of the debates that I was at. And they said that, what if, what was the gentleman who this is really kind of culminating
George
about?
Floyd.
Thank
George
you.
Floyd, yeah.
What if George Floyd was gay?
Yeah.
Would we still
we
be having
we would
this type of movement?
And we know he would.
Saying? And that is, I can't unhear that question.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm grateful. Now, here's the other aspect. I'm grateful for where we are in the movement, and that we're actually finally getting some,
absolutely,
you know, some world-renowned attention around something that has plagued our community for so long. However, would we still have this same tenacity and the same energy if he was a black gay man?
I don't believe we would.
You see what I'm saying? Like, it's infuriating to me. So much so that I literally, and I'm still in plans. I mean, you know, my grandmother passed and kind of halted a few things. But I'm going to, coming soon, my entertainment company is going to do a forum. And we're going to sit down with, you know, somebody that a trans young, you know, man or woman. Mm-hmm. We're going to sit down with a lesbian. We're going to sit down with a gay man. We're going to sit down, you know, if I can get some queer and some bisexual men and women to be a part of this forum, I would love to. But it's going to be a social media forum where we're going to have this conversation to understand where the LGBTQIA fits in to the Black Lives Matter movement. Because I can imagine if I feel like I'm lost, and I don't feel like I'm a part because people don't include or make this inclusive, then I can imagine other people feel the same way. The one thing I will say that I really, 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 really enjoyed yesterday about the NAACP march was the fact that they had about 10 people address the crowd. Mm-hmm. And several people that addressed the crowd mentioned, you know, black LGBTQ lives,
yeah,
within their addressing to the crowd. So that made me feel more a part and inclusive within the movement itself. However, I think on a mass scale, yes, we as a black community have so many other issues that we need to address in terms of our treatment amongst each other, colorism, you know, our treatment for the LGBTQ community, you know, and so on and so
sexism,
forth.
Sexism, even with our black and with our men and women, our skin tones, or, you know,
their colorism.
There's so many divisions when it comes to us. And I've been talking about this since I've been on the radio. I've been talking about this because I feel like it's something that has to be talked about. And it's not something where we can't keep ignoring it, because if we keep ignoring it, we're still going to lose the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, don't let anybody tell you that this is not the perfect time or the opportunity to have the conversations.
Yeah.
These conversations need to be had while we're addressing, while energy is high, while everybody has something to say and has an opinion. Make sure that we are also talking about the fact that regardless of who you sleep with in your bed and in your private space, you are still black and your life still matters.
And that's that.
Is it time for a break? We're going to take a break real quick. We'll be right back. This is Affairs of the Heart. We are back. So we're going to, you know, just kind of stay on this topic. I know you guys are used to us talking about relationships and sex, but I think with everything that is going on within our community, this deserves the full hour of conversation from different perspectives. During our break, we were talking about just our own personal interactions with the police You know, unfortunately, I don't have any to speak of.
That's not unfortunate.
That is unfortunate. I mean, it is unfortunate because I have. I feel like I don't have a.
That's not unfortunate that you haven't had any interaction with the cops.
Well, okay. I say unfortunate not from the sake of being pity, but for the sake of I don't have any experience to really have a fight, but I have a fight to know that it's wrong. Okay. So I say unfortunately, but I, you know, at the end of the day, I don't have, you know, a personal experience of my own to say, you know, that I have been, you know, I've been brutally beaten by the police or even confronted for that matter. But we were talking about a case of a situation where you had a run-in with the police, if you want to share.
And before I even get into that, there was a multiple reports about the cop that was out, that was that Bulldogs that was harassing the gay people that came outside of Bulldogs. So,
okay, wait, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm just thinking about it, like, there have been multiple reports about a cop harassing black gay people that was coming out of Bulldogs. But there was one time that I was at Bulldogs, and my phone was stolen, and my jacket was stolen. I missed that hoodie, too, by the way. It was a red hoodie, but they keep on the rear riding that I wear. But anyways, but no, I had a red hoodie. I had my phone in it, and me and my best friend was out at the time. And I realized my phone was missing. So I started looking around for it. And I got to the back of Bulldogs, and a guy was like, "That's the dude who stole my phone." And so instead of the cops like evaluating what's going on, I'm like, "Sir, I have no phone on me because I'm looking for my phone. Someone stole it." And the cop is like not really trying to hear what I'm saying at all. And so he's like, "Either you can give me the phone or you can get out." And I'm like, "I don't have a phone to give you because someone stole my phone." And so he's like, "Well, get out." So I get out and they follow me to the front. And when I get to the front, there's like, I want to say it's like three other cops, but there was two cops who did with me. It was a lady cop and there was the guy who walked me to the front. And on the way up, he was just calling out kind of fags and like everything. And it was just like, I already knew that it was going south.
So just so we can, so clarity of the story, these are the Bulldogs resident
security, yes.
First and foremost. And these are, for all intents and purposes, these are black people.
Yes, and these are the cops that are outside, not the security lesbians that are inside. No, because that's what the lesbians are the security inside of Bulldogs.
Okay, so you have.
So I'm not making jokes.
Okay, thank you for clarity.
Yeah, there really are. The only security inside of Bulldogs are lesbian women.
Okay.
So, just to clarify that. But when I get to the back, there's a man outside with a gun and everything else.
But
there's
he's a cop. He is a cop.
He's a real cop. Okay. Yes. That's what I'm saying.
I just want, I don't want anybody to be like, wait, what?
No. So, yeah, there was no jokes in any of that.
Okay. So you have, now you have their security and then you have a Atlanta Police Department.
Cop, yes. Cop
present.
So on the, they're calling me all kind of fags, whatever. So I get to the front and they're like, "Well, why the fuck didn't you just leave?" And I'm like, "I kept telling you I can't leave because my ride is inside and the guy that just told you to stole my phone has my phone." And I'm like, "You could have checked the front of me, my picture's on and everything." And they didn't want to hear it. So out of that, then there's like another lady cop that comes. And they're both just having a ball with me or whatever. So at this point, I'm resisting. Thank God I'm not dead. Because they're pushing me in the car. I'm pushing myself back out the car. I'm in handcuffs. And so my best friend finally comes out front. And actually, one of my other friends was just showing up. And so they take me to this place. They handcuff me by my leg to the bottom of this bed. It's like a hospital bed. And I'm crying. You know, this lady, she really looked like my mom, honestly. And I told her, I was like, "Can you please stay in here with me?" And she was like, "I can't stay in here." And it reminded me of watching When They See Us, when the dude was asking that lady, when she was helping him, and she was like, "What am I supposed to do?" And the cop that was like causing all the issues was standing in the hallway looking at him. It was like they couldn't do nothing for me. And they literally kept me on this bed and then they finally let me off the bed And they were like, we're going to let you go home. But they took me to the, they took me to jail. And so I had to, I got up and I went into the little holding area. And at the time I was really afraid because I already had, I was on probation. And but not in Atlanta, in Clayton County. So I just prayed to God that Clayton County didn't find out what was going on. Because I would have been to jail in Clayton County. And that's the worst place to be in jail if you here in Georgia, period. But I ended up going to jail and I had to, I played no contest to everything because if not, I would have to go through this whole court case. And at the time I didn't have money to do none of that stuff, but a lot of that stuff, like all the gay slurs and stuff like that definitely came because they knew I was gay and they didn't give a fuck if I was black when they took me out of that club. So... all these people out here talking about that you gay before you black. Every time that you interact with cops, you are in certain situations where they know you could be at a woman's conference and know your ass is a woman before they know you black, period. I mean, they could see that you're a woman, period. But I'm just saying, you don't, they don't, people don't just always look at you because you black first. But adding gay is a little sprinkle of seasoning to carry on a little bit farther.
But I think what we're talking about on a greater spectrum is the fact that, as we mentioned before we took a break, how the LGBTQ community doesn't necessarily, you know, or some people rather feel that they don't have a dog in this fight, so to speak, as it pertains to the as it pertains to the Black Lives Matter movement. But, you know, even for someone like myself who, you know, shows up to protest and I know, you know, wrong when I see it. And my sexuality is not in the forefront of my mind because that's not necessarily what we're fighting for. But it also brings me back to, you know, the reason why the LGBTQIA plus community is so active in protesting is because that's in our DNA. That's what we come from. We've had to fight to be present and seen and acknowledged. You know, even with the Stonewall protest in the beginning, you know, that's why we have Pride Month. That's why we have Pride parades. The very beginning of our movement was not a parade. It was, you know, the LGBTQ community fighting against police brutality in New York City, specifically at Stonewall. And that was, you know, headed by, you know, a black drag queen, Marsha P. Johnson, you know, or transgendered woman. I don't know the correct terminology. I believe she was a drag queen. I don't believe that she was trans, but she very well could have been, but we want to give her acknowledgement for either. But nonetheless, she was a black woman, for all intents and purposes, to say, you know, let's fight against this police brutality that we're experiencing. So,
unless she was a drag queen.
Because clearly y'all know nothing about Pride. Pride actually started in June of 1969, hence why we celebrate it in the month of June. But that's neither here nor there. It started after a police raid on the Stonewall Inn, which was a gay bar in New York City. People of color started rioting, they started looting, they started stealing, they started damaging property, they started burning shit down because they were protesting police brutality against the LGBTQ community in the 60s. In fact, one of the most prominent figures of those riots was Marsha P. Johnson, a beautiful-ass black drag queen. So I don't know who told you Pride was canceled, but there is no Black Lives Matter movement without Pride. In fact, you guys just woke up in one of the biggest Pride events of your lives. All 50 states, plus 18 countries. Don't let the missing parades fool you.
I think it was drag queen. I do.
I just, that girl that I just played that clip from said what she was.
Okay. We'll play the, well, we probably have played the clip already.
No, I was trying to remember what you said.
We probably played the clip already, so just listen to what we probably posted. Nonetheless, so if you are like us and you feel like, you know, you are part of the LGBTQ community and you do want to support Black Lives Matter because you understand the movement is about police brutality and white supremacy and etc., know that you do have a place and you do belong. So go to the marches, you know, make sure that you are present and make sure that people see you, because at the end of the day, you're black before you are a part of the LGBTQ community. Aaron is listening to the clip so he can verify what Marsha P. Johnson is. That's why he's quiet.
I'm trying to hear the whole thing so I can tell, so we can be correct on it.
Shout out to everybody in the community, since, you know, I'm trying to fill some air. So Aaron is, you know, make sure you are also safe, if nothing else. When you're out and you're about, make sure you are safe. Make sure you go in multiple numbers. Take someone with you and make sure that you all are present and safe. Make sure you have your, please keep wearing your mask. COVID is serious and real. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I had somebody die from it. So please, 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 please make sure you have your mask and you are being safe.
Yeah, she was a drag queen.
Okay, thank you. Sheesh.
I had to get through the video.
It took you long enough.
Well, I mean, it was a minute.
I was dying on the air.
That's how I feel when you left me on the live for the last season.
Speaking of live, as we probably wrap this up, I'm sure we're meeting our time and our quota.
We still have a lot of time.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, so we're going to do some new things in season 3.
Yes.
So let's talk about that for a minute.
So we are going to start catering to our listeners. We have a listener who just loves. Hey, did you see that clip? You see that picture where they was put Beyonce, Michelle, and Kelly as men?
Yes, I have.
I'm just saying, I would love to see Kelly as a man.
A lot of people thought the Michelle.
Michelle, I saw that. I would love for some Kelly though. Those lips was amazing. They were saying that Beyonce was the bottom. Kelly was versatile and Michelle was the top.
Why do we do this?
I don't know.
Why? That's stereotypical.
Beyonce could have been a soft top.
Just because she was light skinned. Like, I don't understand.
Well, she was the more feminine looking one. That's why they said that.
See the problem we have within our own community? We pay people based on what they look like. Anyway. Since Aaron can't get his life together, we've decided to cater to all of our listeners in season 3.
Listen, I feel like because we have a lot of time, we didn't need to lighten this up, so.
Okay, well, we are, and we don't have a lot of time.
We do. We're not even past the hour yet.
See what he looking at.
And the break is still a part of this time.
No, because you stopped it.
I did not stop it.
You did stop it.
I stopped it a part of it.
You did stop it.
A part of it.
You took the break.
I did take the break, okay, but I still, it wasn't the whole break, though.
You had a smoke break and everything. You had that was a break. We have a couple of things that we're doing for this new season. So, Aaron, go ahead and tell them now that you got your life together.
Okay. So, we want to make sure that we're able to interact with you guys. And so, with the end of the last season, we were able to go live and talk to you guys. So we want to do that more often. So what we're going to start doing is we're going to release the podcast on Thursdays. And then at what time?
Starting next week. Because this will be a Wednesday. Yep.
Well, we're going to release this on Thursdays too.
Yep. But you're going to do this one on Thursday? You're not? Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to keep it the same.
No, Thursday. All right. So what time next week?
8 p.m.
8 p.m. next week. We're going to go live to do a recap of what you guys thought about the podcast. We're going to talk to you guys live about the topics that we talked about. This one, I'm glad that we didn't go live on, because this will be a long live, and it will be a lot. So, you know, if you guys want to leave comments or inboxes, you are always able to do that. But we're going to get back into our regular flow next week.
Yeah. Just so we're clear, on Thursdays, we'll release the new podcast. Yes. It'll be now on Thursdays, and then Thursday night, you'll join us on our YouTube page or our Facebook page and our Twitter page to go live for...
or on my Twitter page.
Both.
Okay.
It's both.
Okay.
So Aaron's Twitter page, our Affairs of the Heart Twitter page, our Affairs of the Heart Facebook page, and... is that all of them?
I think that's it.
Oh, and the YouTube channel.
Yeah, YouTube channel.
And the YouTube channel.
Subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Please. Because then you can talk to us live.
And we need the subscribers.
And you can stop texting us while you're listening to the podcast.
And start texting us
on
the
live. And actually be on the live and have the conversation. Right. So we're going to go live each week and talk to you guys about your thoughts behind the topics that we discuss. Obviously, this was the first topic of our new season. However, moving forward, we'll have our regularly scheduled fun with our relationships and our sex topics. We have a lot of good stuff coming up for season 3. Aaron has some great conversations regarding sex because he got some new toys that I cannot wait to hear about. And so we're really excited to do this avenue with you guys and to be live and really have your input in real time.
Also, I am about to start doing some reviews for a sex toy company.
Of course.
Because people just like to hear this stuff. So, I'm going to start giving out this code for you guys to get discounts on sex toys that I purchased. And I'm going to start doing reviews on them. So, you guys, if you want to purchase that stuff, next week we will start giving out those codes. My code is going to be so debonair. That's debonair with no O. And also, don't forget about our website because we have our t-shirts up.
We got t-shirts. We got t-shirts. I'm so excited.
So we have our logo shirts. And we have some of the sayings that we say on the podcast. Like, that's that on that.
Did you get that from somebody else? Or did you really come up with that on your own?
I don't know where I got that from.
Okay. Well.
I think I got it from somewhere.
Trademark it. It's ours. Yeah, we have a website with t-shirts, so please make sure you go to theaffairsoftheheartpodcast.com.
Yes.
To check out our t-shirt line and make sure you get your t-shirts.
And follow us on all social media at The Affairs of the Heart on Instagram, Affairs of the Heart on Facebook, and AOTH Podcast on Twitter. And make sure you guys are subscribing to the YouTube channel.
Yes.
We need 1,000 subscribers. Seriously, we do need
to. So listen, in order to interact with us live, you've got to subscribe to the YouTube channel. You've got to subscribe to our Facebook page. And not only subscribe, turn on the notifications yes. So you know when we're on. That's the only way that you're going to know that we are live. And you don't want to miss our live shows because it's going to be a lot of fun.
And turn on the notifications on this podcast because I'm so tired of hearing, when's the podcast coming on? If you turn on notifications, you will know when the podcast is released.
I get a notification. So. Well, previously I would get a notification every Wednesday. And I'm on the damn podcast. But make sure you turn on your notifications for your podcast. Please. Again, we are on all streaming platforms as podcasts. iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts.
Google, Spotify, yeah. Pandora, anything you listen to a podcast on, we on there. How about that?
And we want to hear from you guys. We can't wait to indulge in this season. And we got a long way to go. This is episode one. So, anything else? Because we're over an hour now.
I guess we're going to just end it here.
Again, make sure you follow us. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend and share. And we want to hear your thoughts. How do you feel about this movement? We do want to hear your thoughts behind this episode, this BLM episode. And let us know what your thoughts are. Do you feel like you're a part of the community? Are you fitting in? What are you doing to give back? What are you doing to help out? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. If you don't know how to give back or help out, make sure you reach out to one of us. We can point you into the direction where maybe some marches are happening in your area, some peaceful protests that are happening in your area. There, you have a local you have a local LGBTQ.
Oh, wait, and Happy Pride Month. We didn't say that.
Happy Pride. Let me finish though.
Okay.
You have a local NAACP that I'm sure it should be. If they're not, you can get in their ads and make sure that they are formulating places for you to peacefully protest what is happening in your community. So make sure you look up that information. But if you need more information, please reach out to Aaron or I.
And write some letters
for you. And then now, Happy Pride Month.
Yes, Happy Pride Month. I know you guys can't go to the parades and the
protests
and your things that you do, but it's still Pride.
It's all right. It's still Pride. And I think moving forward, we did talk about in our planning meeting for season 3 that we're going to do a little bit of LGBTQ history.
Yes.
Just so you know who your people are, who you know, who's a part of the community that you might identify with that you didn't know. So each month, or maybe, we haven't determined when or how, but at some point we're going to make sure that we have some LGBTQ history.
How about we going to surprise you?
Yeah, right. Just wait for it.
Is that on that?
That's that on that. This has been Affairs of the Heart, guys. We love you. We appreciate you. Thanks for hanging in there. And thank you for all the love for my family. I really appreciate it. Have a good night.
Bye.